Good afternoon and welcome to the Linda WAMC's Performing Arts Studio for today's debate among the Democratic candidates for the New York 19 Congressional District seat, currently held by Republican John Faso. I'm your moderator, Alan Shartok. In a moment, we'll meet the candidates and begin our 90-minute debate. But first, I'd like to introduce our panelists and go over today's ground rules. Making up our panel are WAMC Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Allison Dunn. And the man who did all the hard work on this, WAMC News Director Ian Pickus, right here. You can follow today's debate on social media by using the hashtag NYDebate. NY19Debate. We've asked the audience to hold its applause until the end of the debate, and the candidates have agreed to a few ground rules. We'll begin with one-minute opening statements. The seven candidates will alternate questions in alphabetical order. Each candidate will be given 1 minute. Ian is very tough on that machine of his to answer the questions. You'll hear a bell ring when the time is up. We may elect to award a candidate a 30-second rebuttal. All right. And so opening statements.
Yes, Jeff Beals, you'll begin.
Hi, I'm Jeff Beals. I'm a local teacher and a former United States diplomat. And first, I want to thank the hundreds of volunteers from our campaign that are out there making this movement a reality. We are a movement to speak truth to power, like WAMC. And we're the campaign speaking up to the one issue others ignore, and that issue is income inequality. This is an issue that is driving communities to poverty, causing illness, opioid abuse, polluting our earth, and pitting neighbor against neighbor. It must stop, and this is not the America that I stepped up to represent as a United States diplomat, but there is an America that I believe we can make real. We must pass Medicare for all. We must pass a federal jobs guarantee. We must raise Social Security benefits. I'm a tough, experienced progressive, and I'm not afraid to fight for these things. As a diplomat, I spearheaded ceasefire talks in Iraq. As a teacher, I took my class to the Women's March. And now I'm looking for you all to join me, along with the people for Bernie Sanders who have endorsed my campaign in making this a reality.
Thanks, Jeff. Okay, Dave Clegg.
Hi. I'm your neighbor here in the Hudson Valley since 1981. After returning from working with VISTA, a national service program that I did with the Lakota Sioux, I'm a trial lawyer and an ordained deacon. On one side, I have a passion for justice. And on the other side, I have a love for my neighbor. My career has been somewhat of a David and Goliath story. I've taken on big corporations and their predatory practices on behalf of working class people, and I've won time after time. I've also, both inside and outside the court, fought against systemic racism and sexism, and that also with my work as the chair of the Human Rights Commission of Ulster County. John Faso has sold us out for big corporations and for wealthy Wall Street folks. He is the embodiment of the greed and corruption in our political system. That must stop, and it must stop now. I have held people like John Faso accountable my whole career, and if you give me the right to represent you, I'll do it now. Thank you.
Erin Collier.
Hi, everyone. My name's Erin Collier. Thank you so much for coming today. I'm from Cooperstown. My family's been living in Cooperstown for actually 8 generations, and we've been farming there for 5 generations. So my roots are deep, and they are strong in this community. And, you know, coming from a farming family, I grew up poor in this community. We qualified for reduced lunches, and I've been working since I was 14 years old. I waitressed for 8 years to put myself through college. So I know what it's like to go without. Today, I'm an economist. I'm a well-educated economist. And instead of working on Wall Street or some lucrative career, instead, I have chosen to dedicate my career to helping people. I work on a U.S. government project that addresses food security to prevent food shortages and help starving people around the world. I've worked in health clinics for mothers and children in poor neighborhoods that have no other health care services. And I've worked to help ethnic minorities gain services to allow them to lift them out of poverty. I've dedicated my entire life, personal and professional, to helping people. I've chosen people over profit, and those are the values a leader should have. We need change. I am that change, and I would be honored to represent and fight for you.
Antonio Delgado.
Good afternoon, Antonio Delgado. Pleasure to be here.
I live in Dutchess County with my wife and our two little boys, Maxwell and Coltrane. I'm running for Congress because for too long our political leaders have forgotten about working families like the one I come from, not too far from here in Schenectady. I see my mother out there in the audience. Hi, Mom. Yeah. You know, what we've seen for the last 40-some-odd years are the folks in D.C. only pay attention to the folks who have money. The economy has doubled in size. Wages have remained stagnant. 80% of folks right now are asked to share 10% of the wealth. And all we get for solutions is to roll back the ACA. All we get for solutions is a tax scam on the backs of working and middle-class folks. These are not solutions. This is gasoline on the fire. And the only way to change it is to put people in Congress who understand the value of opportunity, who understand the value of a public education, who understand the value of protecting our environment, who understand the value and the struggle for a socially just society that is leaving people behind day in and day out, and that is here what I'm here to do. Thank you.
Brian Flynn.
Thank you all for being here, and thank you for listening at home. My name is Brian Flynn. I am a lifelong progressive Democrat. I actually think I might be the only person on this stage who actually is a lifelong Democrat. I am an activist, a union member, a small business owner, and I'm the third generation in my family to choose Greene County as my home. Look, people keep telling me they don't recognize their country anymore, but this isn't about Trump. Trump is the result, not the cause. The cause is that for decades we've ignored the American worker and the economic pain and anxiety that they've been living with. For decades, we've left small towns and rural communities behind. For decades, we've allowed women to be paid a fraction of what they're owed, and we've done worse by communities of color. So we not only kept people down, we pushed them there. And that's exactly the pain that Trump preyed upon and got him elected. So if you want to stop Trump, then we have to address these underlying issues that got us here, and that's exactly why I'm running. I have a plan for the American worker. It's about creating jobs, it's about raising wages, but it's also about removing the barriers that have kept people down.
Gareth Rhoad.
Well, thank you, Dr. Shartok. Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Ian. Are we ready to win? 27 days from today is you all go out there and make your choice. I think it's easy for all of us because we know who we're voting for, but I know for all of you, you've been hearing us for now almost a year. To beat FASO, we know what it's going to take. It's going to take a candidate who can't get attacked on where they're from. I was born and raised in this district. I grew up working on a farm, went out and drilled water wells, served as a volunteer firefighter, unimpeachable local roots in this district. As you know, here in Albany, FASO's been in office for a long time, 1987. It's going to take a candidate who has a political experience, government experience, only candidate on this stage who's worked in government in a political role here in New York State. This district is larger than the state of New Jersey. It's enormous, even though it doesn't include Albany. I am the only candidate who's going to every single town in this district. I got a Winnebago to do it, going town by town by town. That's why that type of campaign, that type of background is what it's going to take to beat FASO. It's why he's been attacking me from day one. It's why I have the support of the Communications Workers of America, one of the largest organized labor groups right here in New York, supporting my campaign.
Thank you. Pat Ryan.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me. I'm Pat Ryan. Born and raised here in the district in Kingston, and I also have to give a shout-out to my parents who joined us as well. Growing up, from my parents, from my grandparents, I was taught that as a citizen, you have a responsibility to serve, to give back, to participate. And so for me, after high school, at Kingston High School, that meant going to West Point. It meant 2 combat deployments, serving in Iraq. It meant starting a small business to get better technology out to our troops in harm's way. But I'm running for Congress right now because I feel, again, called to continue that service. I look at this community that has always had my back and my family's back, and I don't see anyone in Washington standing up and fighting for us. I see Trump and enablers like FASO cutting our health care, rolling back environmental safety protections, caving in to the gun lobby, and I'm running for Congress to stand up to Trump, to stand up to FASO, and take our country back. Thank you.
Right on time.
The first question goes to Jeff Beals. The 19th Congressional District has its share of hunters and gun owners. Specifically now, what, if any, changes to the nation's gun laws would you like to see? Do you support New York's SAFE Act?
I'm glad you asked that because it's the one issue where I think we are all standing here as leaders, but maybe we need to be followers. I'm a teacher in our community, and my students walked out of my class over this issue. And my wife, who's here tonight, is a kindergarten teacher in our community, and she's actually afraid to go to school sometimes because of the environment we're living in. I have to conduct active shooter drills in my school, something beyond what my parents experienced in the age of duck and cover, and for a reality that students are actually afraid of. I think we have to follow those students' lead and finally take action to impose universal background checks, put a ban on these assault weapons, and hold the gun manufacturers accountable for the damage that they're doing. We did it with cigarette manufacturers. It'll work here. I don't want to hear any more thoughts and prayers on this, and I don't want to hear any more thoughts and prayers on the issue of healthcare either, where people are dying and action is far overdue. So you can count on me to fight for that on day one and follow my students to do it.
Aaron Collier.
Sorry, Dave Clegg will be next.
Yeah.
Dave Clegg to...
That's good. Okay, Dave.
Same question.
Please.
We have been shamed by the children. So much inaction on Congress's part that's inexcusable. They are hostage to the NRA, apparently, and the gun manufacturers. And that has to change. We have to stand up to all the lobbying that's done through the NRA and the money that comes in through the gun manufacturers. And the people like John Fassel would take $43,000 plus from the NRA and then give them what they want. I'm ashamed at John Fassel for H.R. 38, along with not doing the gun protections that Jeff just mentioned, but doing H.R. 38, the concealed carry reciprocity law that is a violation of the rights of every policeman in this state and a violation of our own state's rights. Why is John Fassel doing that other than his allegiance to the NRA instead of his allegiance to the people he's supposed to serve? We have to stand up against such lobbying, such corporate welfare, and let's be the ones to do it. The Democrats are the ones that can.
Again, Dave, sorry about having left you out. Aaron Collier, please.
We just had the 22nd school shooting in our country this year. Americans' gun deaths are 25 times higher than any other developed country's gun death rate. Clearly, we have a problem. And yet the Republicans continue to do nothing about this and refuse to do anything about it. How can they see children being shot in schools and refuse to put gun safety measures in place? I have a friend, a close friend, whose mom was a teacher at Sandy Hook. She's a kindergarten teacher there and was there the day teaching her students when the shooting happened. And it is such a traumatizing experience that her son, my friend, and her can barely speak about it today. My sister is a public school teacher, and teachers and students should not go to school, should not be going to places where that are supposed to be learning environments and be afraid for their lives. We must do something. We must ban assault weapons and bump stocks. They have no place in civilian society. We must also close loopholes to unsafe gun access at the gun shows that continue to be completely unregulated. And we must get NRA money out of politics. As long as we have congressmen like John Fassel taking money from NRA, we will not see anything done. Enough is enough.
Time.
Antonio Delgado.
Yes, we have an epidemic on our hands. 8 children are dying a day from gun violence. 17 to 18 are hospitalized a day. Women are 5 times more likely to die, be shot and killed in a domestic violence dispute when a gun is involved. The mass shootings are relentless and they are nonstop. But yet, despite the tragedy in Vegas, when everybody looked up and asked that question, what is a bump stock? And everybody said we must ban it. No legislation to ban it. Why? Why have we not had universal background checks? Why are we still allowing weapons of war to be bought and sold and then used in churches and streets and concert halls? Why? It's because a small group of folks have bought and paid for the prevention of these solutions. And it's simple, and it's a travesty. And it's no better example of how broken our democracy is when you have all this broad consensus. Over 80% of folks want to see these things happen, and nothing gets proposed in D.C. So I have an answer. Do not elect anybody who takes money from the NRA. Point blank, period. That's how we solve the problem.
Brian Flynn.
The reality is we're decades, if not centuries, late on this issue, and we should all be ashamed that the children have to lead us. But we have to figure out how to do something, and the way we're going to do it is to make gun owners part of the solution. I'm from Greene County, and the overwhelming majority of people in Greene County own guns in their homes. And I went and talked to my neighbor, John, who's an NRA member, and he's a Republican, and he has a ton of guns in his home. And I asked him, what can we do to get things done? And John said we should ban assault weapons. He said we should have universal background checks. He said we should end the gun show loopholes. He said we should allow remove the Dickey Amendment. We should allow people to sue gun manufacturers. John basically supported our positions that we're standing up here today. If we're going to solve this issue, we have to stop using the politics of division. We may need to make people part of the solution. 90% of gun owners are not in the NRA. They want to reduce gun violence as well. Let's bring them in and make them part of the solution like I did with my neighbor John. That is how we have to get something done.
Thank you, Ryan. Gareth Rhodes.
So you're hearing a lot of agreement on what needs to be done, and I'm with the other candidates on these. Assault weapons ban, making sure universal background checks. But we all know that this is a large rural district, and many of our neighbors own firearms. That's how I grew up. I grew up working on a farm where a gun was a tool, just like a tractor. I've been to the range before. I know a lot of parts of this district don't have cell phone service. So to elect a Democrat who can stand up and fight for these things, it's going to be important to have the type of Democrat who can go to the Rod and Gun Clubs, who can go to the Sportsmen's Association, who can talk about this from a personal level, and can talk about why we don't need assault weapons in our communities. And I look forward to standing up on stage this fall with John Faso, when John Faso has to defend his record of voting against universal background checks, voting against safe storage laws, voting against the assault weapons ban. And I'm happy to challenge John Faso any day to go to the range with me and see who's a better shot. But I think it's important that we'll hold his record accountable for this and stand up and fight for these common sense provisions, and that's what I'll do in Washington.
Pat Ryan.
One of the hardest conversations I've had in my life was with my mom, who's a teacher, just retired after a whole career teaching first graders, second graders, when she told me that now multiple times a month, young students are being put into closets in classrooms, the doors shut, the lights turned off, and her describing the fear in their voice and hearing the fear and the sadness and the powerlessness in my own mom's voice. We are so far past the point of enough is enough. And I agree with my colleagues on policy. What is lacking on this issue, in my belief, is the moral courage to stand up and say what we all know to be true. 97% of Americans support banning bump stocks. 80% support an assault weapons ban. Those are things where the American people are in agreement, but we're not seeing action in Congress. I chose to take some risk in a district where there are a lot of responsible gun owners and focus my first campaign ad on tackling this issue head on. The weapons I carried in combat for 27 months should never be on our streets or in our schools.
Thank you. We'll move on to another topic now. This question begins with Dave Clegg. After halting aspects of the program, President Trump gave Congress a deadline to act on DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, that came and went. To date, no action has been taken. Larger immigration reform has been a dead end in this Congress. What would you do in the House on this issue?
The question is abhorrent moving to evil in our treatment of immigrants? That was a statement today in a Times opinion article. And I agree with it. We're separating children at the border from their parents. People who come to this country lawfully seeking asylum, we are moving the kids away from the parents. We are traumatizing children. What do we stand for in America when we do that? We should do a Clean Dreamers Act, and I would fight for that. DACA would be part of that, obviously. Hopefully the courts hold off Trump until that happens. We need a path to citizenship for all those law-abiding people who've come to our economy and supported it and are productive citizens. That's what we have to find a way to. And we have to become somebody who respects the human rights of other people who are coming from Central American countries that are plagued with gang violence, and we are the ones in part a cause of that. Let's be human rights advocates.
Aaron Collier, same question to you.
It is horrifying to watch what the Republicans and Trump are doing to our immigrants. We have a president who not only allows, but also incites and encourages hate towards immigrants. I have a brother-in-law. My brother-in-law is from Guatemala. He's now a resident of upstate New York. And right after Trump was elected, he was at a gas station pumping gas in his car, had strangers drive up to him and scream at him to get out and go home. That is the kind of attitude that our president is inciting in our country, and it is hateful and it is dangerous. We also have friends, immigrant friends. My brother-in-law's friends were picked up by ICE in the Hudson Valley in the past couple weeks, and we have not heard from them since. This is unacceptable. Diversity makes our country stronger, and it makes our communities better. And I want to say to all the Latinos that are listening today, gracias por escuchar y gracias por todo lo que hacen en nuestras comunidades. And I will fight for a Clean Dream Act, I will fight for a path to citizenship, and I will fight to push back against the hate that our president is inciting in our country against immigrants and stand up for their rights.
Thank you. Now to Antonio Delgado, same question.
We cannot forget that we are a land of immigrants. This is who we are. And this state, on the Statue of Liberty, makes it plain what our mission is. And we have to decide now more than ever if we're going to remain the country that opens its arms to the world and provides a beacon of hope, or we're going to close our fists and go back to the pre-World War II order. This is what's at stake. And the level of cruelty and the lack of humanity and lack of compassion and love in our politics right now is at an all-time high, and it is disgusting. And there's no better example of this than how our president and how our folks in Congress are talking about the problem of immigration and how we deal with folks in a way that have been pushed and marginalized. Folks who are the bedrock of our economy in many respects. I've traveled all across my district, and I can't tell you how many times I've talked to dairy farmers who look at me and say, we've got to fix this problem. We've got to move these folks out of the shadows. The vast majority of which voluntarily pay their taxes. They're not committing crimes. They're folks who are the bedrock of our society, and we need to act like it.
Okay, to Brian Flynn.
This week, John Faso sent out a mailer using immigrants as part of his politics of division. What we have to do is we have to show leadership on this issue. I'm the grandson of four Irish immigrants who came here with nothing and came here with no skills, and they would never be let in under the current administration's approach to visas. The reality is the reason why the American economy is stronger than the European economies or the Japanese economy is because of immigrants. Overwhelmingly, immigrants create jobs in our communities. A third of small businesses here in New York are owned and operated by immigrants, and this used to be a bipartisan issue. George Bush and Ted Kennedy were very close to comprehensive immigration reform, and my plan for the American worker includes that. Yes, we need to get a clean bill for the DACA kids, but we need to have a path to legalization and citizenship for all undocumented workers, because that is what it means to be American. We cannot grow this economy without the input and support of a strong immigration policy. And we, as Democrats, haven't taken the lead on this issue, and the time is now.
Thank you. Gareth Rhodes, please.
Joel Guerrero in New Paltz, Leo Santos in Kingston, Bobby Bott in Saugerties, these are our neighbors, and these are Americans. And they have, because of what's happening coming out of Washington, their lives have been put on their lines, and their lives have been uprooted. This is happening across our district. I was at the Oakhurst Diner in Millerton, and a neighbor came and said, I know you're running for Congress. My one issue is my son is a student at Dutchess County Community College. He's one of the 800,000 dreamers studying computer science. Do something to keep him in this country. That's why I support a Clean Dream Act. That's why I would revive that 2013 immigration bill and put it on, make sure it comes to the House floor for a vote. In 2016, when John Faso ran for this seat, he said he opposed giving the 13 million folks here in the country, undocumented folks here in the country, a path to citizenship. I could not be on the more opposite side of this than he is. This is a problem that's affecting us here in New York 19. Since Trump took office, the underreporting of sexual harassment and sexual assault in our immigrant community has plummeted. We have to do something
that's
about
time.
This and do something about it now.
Next to Pat Ryan.
So we have to make two cases. We have to make a moral case, and we have to make a pragmatic economic case. The moral case, I think, is easy. And we've seen, in addition to the mailer that Brian mentioned, John Faso's had a series of digital ads up over the last few days that are xenophobic, that are divisive, that are not what this country is about, that are trying to spur a reaction to the tremendous contributions that immigrants make in our community in all different ways. So that is something I'm committed to, making that moral case that opening our arms to anyone who wants to come to our country is what has made us special and different from the beginning. But then we also have to go around and make a pragmatic case. I can't tell you the number of farmers across the district I've talked to who told me last year they had to leave crops in the field because their workers were afraid to even show up for fear of being picked up by ICE or other law enforcement. That's not how this country should be, morally or economically, and that's the case I'll make.
And Jeff Beals to finish the topic on immigration.
We are a nation of immigrants, and they aren't the threat. They're who we are. My grandparents were all immigrants. They came to this country as survivors of the Holocaust, and they found their piece of the American dream here in Sullivan County and in our family farm in the Hudson Valley. And I was a United States diplomat. I have the most government experience of any candidate running here. And I saw the beginnings of a delirium in America after 9/11, where we created institutions like ICE and framed this as a national security threat. It's not. America is not going to be taken down by immigrants or Muslims. It's going to be taken down by unbridled corporate greed. And if you're worried about people sneaking in over the borders, I think you should worry about the billions of dollars in corporate profits being snuck over the borders to avoid corporate taxation and to avoid paying their share into our society. Let's close those holes. Let's stand up for those people, and let's actually make the America that we know can be a reality based on our strengths, not on our fears.
Thank you. Allison Dunn has the next question.
Right, and this will go to Aaron Collier. I believe we're up to for starting. So the House has now taken two votes on a resolution that would call for debate on the question of impeaching President Donald Trump, though the number of aye votes is still a minority. The tally of supporters is growing. Based on the evidence that has already emerged about the president's conduct, do you support initiating the impeachment process at this point?
I think that, you know, I'm glad to see that the attention that has been being put on this, obviously, Trump, we all know that there is a lot of under investigation right now, and I'm very happy to see Mueller's investigation pushing forward, and I think that it's really important that we protect that investigation. Trump continues to try to undermine it by inflating, making inflammatory claims about what's happening, and it's very clear that we need to protect it, and Congress needs to make this a nonpartisan issue and needs to stand behind it and make sure that we uphold our Department of Justice's role in this investigation. And I think that I would wait to see what the results of are the investigation, and I think that we all know what those results will be, and I would just, for prudency's sake, I think it's important that we wait to see what the results are and let the system do due process of the investigation that's meant to be.
Antonio Delgado, next.
Yes, I do not support initiating impeachment process right now. I also do not support impeding the investigation that is underway. An investigation that has been politicized and treated like a political football at the expense of our democracy. Make no mistake about it, we're still under attack. We had the folks in Central in the intelligence community step before Congress and say we've done nothing since finding out, consensus here, that Russia has meddled in our elections, and they're still here. Okay, they're still amongst us. They're still within our midst. And we have taken no steps to shore up our electoral infrastructure. We have taken no steps to make sure that these types of incidents cannot ever happen again. Instead, we do have a president who continues to acknowledge the fact that Russia meddled in our elections. We do have a president who delayed in issuing the sanctions that the Congress bipartisanly passed. We do have a president that fired Comey. So there's a lot of issues there that we have to be mindful of and diligent.
That's time.
Thank you, Antonio. Brian Flynn?
I had the opportunity to work with Bob Mueller for the better part of a decade and a half, and I trust him to ensure that we get the evidence we need in order to proceed with impeachment proceedings. But I would not proceed until we get that evidence. That's foolhardy, and I believe it's a red herring. I also believe that it doesn't actually solve the real problem. The real problem is the corruption that we've allowed to exist that's systemic. This isn't just about Donald Trump. Although I think perhaps he and his administration is one of the most corrupt administrations we've ever seen or even imagined. I think the bigger issue is that we have a system that has allowed such corruption to take place, and we've done nothing to stop it. We haven't had electoral reform. We haven't gotten money out of politics. We haven't done anything to hold our representatives accountable. We don't have co-equal branches of the government. I think we have to fix the systemic issues while at the same time allowing Bob Mueller to do his work and protect his work day in and day out so that if we do get enough evidence, we can impeach him and hopefully at the same time impeach Mike Pence.
Thank you, Brian. Gareth Rhodes, the impeachment question.
Great timing.
The Mueller probe must be completed before impeachment is called for. But what is essential is that we have a Congress that holds this president accountable and stands up to this president. And FASO must co-sponsor the bill that will make sure that the Congress is protecting Mueller and let the work go on. But let's also not forget that Trump won New York 19 by 7 points last election. This is a big district, 11 counties. We're a large, rural, mountainous area. And we need candidates who are taking the time to show up in the rural areas. That's what I've been doing from day one. I was out in the town of Morris yesterday in Otsego County. 37 Democrats voted there, had lunch at Nicole's Diner. I was chatting with a gentleman named Pete who has an auto body shop there. And he said he has only seen one candidate his entire life in the town of Morris. It was a state Senate candidate about 12 years ago. He said who never came back. And we had a long chat. He said he's never voted for a Democrat before. When we talked about what the issues that kept him up at night, it was the fire department and EMT services shutting down in the town, the local public school not getting the resources. We can win in these areas if we show up.
Thank you, Gareth. Pat Ryan on the impeachment question.
Sure. So I think I agree with my colleagues. We have to let Mueller's investigation proceed. I support the bipartisan, bicameral legislation to protect his investigation, keep it funded. I want to quickly share, on Gareth's point, this amazing letter that I got in the mail the other day from a woman out in Deposit in Delaware County. Dear Mr. Ryan, I received your mailing today. I want you to know that I agree with everything you covered that you stand for. I'm 77 years old and have been a registered Republican since I was old enough to vote. However, I re-registered last fall as a Democrat because I couldn't stomach Trump and what he stands for. He is a lying, two-faced egomaniac and attempting to not only ruin this country, but also the whole world, for example, destroying our environment. Best of luck to you and your campaign. So, yes, Trump won here, but there are a lot of people like Bonnie around this district that I've met that see that we are fundamentally backsliding from what this country is about, and I believe we can unify behind that, and that's something that I want to lead.
Thank you, Pat. Jeff Beals on the impeachment question.
This administration is fundamentally corrupt, and the president is raking in money hand over fist from corrupt interests as he runs his own hotel business and accepts money from foreign governments. I don't need the Mueller investigation to know that. And I'll look forward to the results of the Mueller investigation so we can know even more. But honestly, this question to me takes us in a direction that is more fundamental. What do y'all think the problem is here that we're here to solve? Why do you think you have so many candidates running? If you think the problem is just the last year and a half of this corrupt administration or just the reign of John Faso, then you have seven fine choices to turn this R to a D. But if you think the problem is systematic problems in our country for the last 40 years that have seen our democracy unmoored by income inequality and corporate power to the point that people don't even think their vote can make a difference anymore, then I'd suggest you only have one choice, because that's the campaign that I'm running, to take action on the big banks and actually take action to change the fundamentals of our economy. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Dave, before we move to you, are you yes, no, or wait and see, Jeff? I just wanted to be clear on the impeachment question for proceeding. Yes, no,
let's
or wait and see?
Wait and see.
Thank you. Dave, same question. Dave Klug?
Our democracy is in jeopardy. Everything that Donald Trump is doing, trying to undermine this investigation, a lawful investigation from our Justice Department and the FBI and Mueller, is something that should not be countenanced in any level of government. And yet, we see the Republican Congress not only following up on it, but actually being complicit in obstructing justice in this case. That's something that we cannot stand for. We have no checks in our government anymore. The Republican Congress is not a check on the executive. The Supreme Court is no longer a check on the executive. We are in dangerous territory, and we must pursue this at all vigor, at all times. Now, I'm not going to say that we should impeach him right now, because we have to let the Mueller investigation come to fruition, because if we don't do that, we're going to be vulnerable to attacks. But once that happens, yes, we should do it with absolute advocacy, and we should do it in a way that takes President Trump down.
Thank you, Dave.
This question is for Antonio Delgado. In the last two elections, Republicans with strong ties to the district have won decisive victories over Democrats, who are labeled as carpetbaggers. What should the voters know about your roots in the 19th district?
Yes, thank you for that question. As I noted, born and raised in Schenectady, working class parents, worked for GE for a very long time, lived the narrative that for a lot of folks across this region is very familiar, a narrative of upward mobility, relying on jobs that provide a secure and predictable income and allow families to plan for their children's future. My generation, I'm 41, my wife, who grew up in Woodstock only an hour away, I would argue is the last generation that lived in that time where you could plan for your children's future and rely on these kinds of jobs. My wife and I actually would end up getting married in the 19th at the Catterskill in Catskill. I actually proposed to her at the Ship to Shore in Kingston. Her mother is the head of the Chamber of Commerce in Saugerties. My parents are now retired in Schenectady, and we are now raising our little boys in Dutchess County. This is home. And the values that I learned here growing up, integrity, character, decency, love, respect, compassion, are the values that I want to bring with me to D.C. to represent you.
Brian Flynn, same question.
I'm the third generation in my family to choose Greene County as my home. My daughter goes to the local public school. My wife teaches there. We ended up here because my grandfather was an immigrant from Ireland, and he was a bartender in the Irish Catskills in Leeds. And my father spent his childhood there. So it was 15 years ago that we decided to come back here and make our home. We couldn't be happier. We chose a great community, and it's actually been a great experience for us. We've been involved in the community. In fact, I've embarrassed my children more often than not in community theater that I've been doing for over a decade up there. But I think it's important when John Faso says that all these carpetbaggers are running against me, I actually tweeted back at him, which I've now learned to do. I tweeted back at him and said, John, my great uncle, who some of you may know, Michael J. Quill, has a museum named after him right here in the district. My family's been here since the 1940s. So I said, John, if you'd like to come for a tour of the museum named after my great uncle, I would love to give you a tour anytime.
Gareth Rhodes.
Thanks, Dr. Shartok. I think this is it's an important question because we're all in this because we want to win this seat this fall. And we've seen the last couple of cycles what does not work here in New York 19. We had a candidate, I think in 2014, spend about $4 million of his own money and lost by 30 points in a district where there's more registered Democrats than Republicans. It's just the fact that if you haven't worked or lived or voted in this district before, it's going to be a much more of an uphill battle than it would be if you pick a candidate who has unimpeachable local roots. The New York Times did a story on this race comparing a number of us, said that my roots in this district are, quote, beyond dispute, because they are. Born and raised here, grew up working on a farm, went out, put myself through college, had the kind of working class background in this district that will help our party win this fall. That's why one of the largest labor unions out there went out and endorsed my campaign, because those working class roots are so important. This district is enormous. You can't go out there and be calling it just the Hudson Valley and Catskills. What are you telling the folks here in Rensselaer County in the Capital Region? What are you telling the folks out in Otsego County? They don't live in the Hudson Valley and Catskills. It's important to have a candidate who gets it. Thank you.
Thank you. Pat Ryan?
So the hypocrisy of this attack, which will come from Faso, is unbelievable. This is a guy who literally moved up here as a carpetbagger to run for a seat in the New York state government, wasn't born and raised here, yet he will make this attack. So I agree with my colleagues, I agree with Gareth, that roots are important. My roots here, I also think, are unimpeachable, born and raised in Kingston, a family that has a record of being active citizens in the community. My mom, a public school teacher, my dad, a small business owner, and many generations before that. What I think people are asking with this question is, are you going to have our back when you go to Washington? Are you going to remember the place where you're from that hopefully you're going to, you know, after serving, come back to and have to walk down the streets and look people in the eye and say, I did right by you? You know, even when I was deployed in Iraq, I absentee voted here in this district. I got care packages from my mom's first grade class and other tremendous groups from this district. I will always have this community's back.
Thank you.
Jeff Beals, please.
Yeah, I work in the middle of this district as a high school teacher, and my wife works here, and we're raising our children here. And I voted against John Faso in the last election before deciding to run against him. And Dave and I are the only two candidates in this race who actually work in the district and didn't move here in order to run. But honestly, when I look at why we've lost, I think it's because of something worse than carpetbagging. It's because of corporate bagging. John Faso is a corporate bagger. He is somebody who funnels corporate money to our district in order to buy the seat and represent his donors and not us. And the reason we lose elections also, I think, is because people don't even come out to vote. They don't think politics has an impact on their lives. And until Democrats stand up for things that will change people's lives, we won't change that reality or win elections, because we've lost this election even with a candidate with impeccable local roots when Julian Schreibman ran. No, I think we have to stand up to forgive student loan debt, pass Medicare for All, and pass a federal jobs guarantee that gives anybody who needs it work. That will change the way people vote, and that'll give us a Democratic victory.
Dave Clegg.
I'm the candidate with 1,000 roots in the community. I actually went to New Paul's, graduated from New Paul's, worked my way through New Paul's as a carpenter and a house painter, graduated back in 74, and moved back here in 81, as I said. And since that time, I've been working, raised a family here. My wife's a school teacher. I've been involved in a lot of community activities, from helping to start the homeless shelter, to having Habitat for Humanity Incorporated, to working with Family of Woodstock, a great organization that does so much in my community for the last 15 years, to coaching basketball for the last 25 years. So what does it take to beat John Faso? I think it takes somebody with impeccable credentials in terms of integrity and in terms of community involvement, and not only involvement, but doing things that uplift people in our community, both the vulnerable and the people who can be raised at a higher level. And that's what I've worked on for the last 37 years, and I want to continue to do that in Congress.
Thank you.
Aaron Collier.
My family has been living in this district for 8 generations. So my great, 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 great grandfather fought in the Revolutionary War and then settled in the Cooperstown area in the 1700s, and my family has been here ever since then. Nobody can outroot me, not on this stage, and certainly not John Faso. There's a Colliersville over by Cooperstown. Colliersville, my ancestors founded that. Very proud of that. And my family's been farming in the district for 5 generations. My parents both grew up on dairy farms in the Cooperstown area, and I grew up on a farm. We still have our farm in Cooperstown, working farm today. My parents went to Cooperstown High School. I went to Cooperstown High School. I was a Cooperstown Rotary Exchange student. Nobody can outroot me in this district. And in our district, roots really matter. And John Faso will go after roots. This is a really important topic. And as I said, John Faso certainly cannot outroot me. And I look forward to that challenge.
Thank you. If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Democratic debate among candidates for New York's 19th Congressional District on WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Brian Flynn will begin our next round of questioning. It's a simple one. If the New York gubernatorial election were held today, who would you vote for and why?
This is going to shock everyone, but neither Governor Cuomo nor Cynthia Nixon have called and asked me for my support or my vote. I don't know either one of them. I've never met them. So right now, I'm going to do the same thing perhaps most voters in this room are going to do, is look at the candidates and focus on what matters. But unlike John Faso, I don't think being a congressman is part of your job is to insert yourself into state politics. I think your job is to represent your community and advocate for issues that matter to them at the federal level, but also to do what you can to support and fortify the efforts at a local level, but not insert yourself into the politics and state politics. I think that that is something that John Faso has been doing, because I think he's really still upset that he didn't win as governor. So I will not insert myself or involve myself. Over the next few months, hopefully I'll get a chance to meet one of them, and I'll choose to vote for one of them. But at this point, I haven't decided, and I really don't think they're waiting for my endorsement.
Let's follow that up with Gareth Rhodes.
Absolutely. I am. When I got out of college, I wanted to come back and serve my community. I did an internship in college down at the White House under President Obama. I was privileged to get a low-level job up in the communications office with the current governor. Worked as hard as I possibly could. Rose to become the governor's traveling press secretary. Traveled across this state. Did a lot of work in this congressional district. I remember I was actually out in Sydney when Amphenol, after Tropical Storm Lee, was wiped away almost, and was threatening to leave this state. I was part of the process to help Amphenol rebuild and keep 1,000 jobs in Delaware County. You can go to Margaretville and Prattsville and Phoenicia today, talk to people who I was there working with after Hurricane Irene. And it's a record of that I'm proud to have, a record of government work here in this community. And if I think we're still waiting to see who's going to be on the ballot in November. I do support the current governor so far in the primary, but I haven't had the chance to meet Cynthia Nixon yet, and I hope we'll be seeing her more here in upstate.
Okay, we go to Pat Ryan next. Same question.
Yeah, I don't think I have enough information, frankly, about either of their platforms yet to make a decision. What I do think is absolutely critical is that we get back to a place where we do have close partnership between our state elected officials and our federal elected officials. The toxicity of the relationship between the current governor and our representative, all that does is hurt everyone here in this district.
That's something that, it's mirrored in the relationships in Washington too. A big part of what we need to fix in our politics is someone who's going to go to Washington and reverse this trend of selfishness and looking out for re-election and actually do what's right for the greater good and for the community. And that's what we need to get back to in our politics.
We go to the other end of the table now, and Jeff Beals.
I think we need change across the board. I think we need it in the State House. I think we need it in Washington, too. I don't intend to vote for Nancy Pelosi's continued leadership. And I think the Democratic Party needs to be revived. And I think this is the place to do it. We are the district where FDR made his home. This is the district where the Democratic Party was once a force in our politics. And it's not that force anymore. It's lost a tremendous amount of ground. And I believe something that I think is very fundamental. I believe that we should be in a society where all people could do well, not just a handful of billionaires. But instead, we live in a society where that handful of billionaires funds political campaigns, funds campaigns on both sides of the aisle, funds campaigns in this very primary, and winds up deciding the issues before the people ever get a chance to speak. I've turned them down in this election. I was backed by the National Group of Bernie Sanders staffers, the Justice Democrats, because of it. And I think when we stand up for a bold progressive agenda with an experienced candidate, we're going to make the real change we need.
Moving along to Dave Clegg.
So I would not endorse either candidate at this point, but I would say that Cynthia Nixon's policies are more in line with mine. What I would like to see encouraged is a movement to a clean energy future for New York State, and I do not believe that Governor Cuomo is moving in that direction fast enough. One of the things that I think corrupts our system the most is a lack of campaign finance reform. We have a loophole in New York State, the LLC loophole, where we have people able to give untold numbers of money to politicians, and that loophole should be closed. The governor has not done that yet. On the federal level, we must do something about campaign finance reform. It is what corrupts our system. It is what allows John Faso to take money from his hedge fund friends and to make decisions based upon their best interests instead of ours. Until we change that, and there is a Fair Elections Now Act that I would support, until we change campaign finance funding, we're not going to have a government that we can rely on and believe in. That's what we have to do.
Next to Aaron Collier.
Yeah, like my colleagues, I would say that at this point in time, I wait to see who comes out of that race, and I'm focusing on this race. And it is my hope, and I would encourage whoever does win to stand up for working class individuals. We have a system, our political system is really dominated by wealthy upper class elites, and our system lends itself to make it easier for wealthy upper class elites to get elected and to run for office. And as somebody who grew up poor and coming from working class family, I feel very strongly that we need more working class individuals in leadership and have a say and have a seat at the table. So that is a big motivation of why I'm running. And I would like to see, I would hope to see whoever wins do more of that. I would also encourage them to focus on evidence-based policy. As an economist, I believe very strongly in evidence-based policy and evidence-based conclusions. And I think that is greatly lacking from our leadership and our decision-making, and there should be more of that.
Thank you. Antonio Delgado, last on this question.
Yeah, so I'm not decided yet on the Cuomo-Nixon race. I've been pretty busy trying to win this one. And really, you know, that's what it's about. It's about the work. It's about getting out there, listening, engaging, and making sure that you are here to represent the people. I think we all know that we have a congressman right now who is yet to even have a public forum where he is engage with his constituents. And it's a travesty, and it's anti-democratic. I've traveled all across this district and doing work nonstop for over a year now. I am the only candidate on this stage that's been endorsed by a county, Dutchess County. I'm proud to say that I've been endorsed by one of the more important progressive groups in the state of New York, Citizen Action. Secured the most signatures to get on the ballot. We've been working very hard, knocking over 40,000 doors, and building a movement that is grounded in our progressive values, equality, fairness, opportunity, dignity, civility. These are the things that I think collectively can bring us together to take on what we know is a cruel, cruel, dark energy on the other side of the aisle right now.
That's time. Just to clarify before we leave this point behind, you're all running in a Democratic primary. Many listeners are going to be voting in the statewide Democratic primary. As of May 31st, no one on this stage is willing to say whether they're for Cynthia Nixon or Andrew Cuomo in the race for governor. Correct?
I believe
Correct.
As for me, yes.
Gareth. Gareth supports the current governor.
Jeff spoke up as well.
Right. Okay, let's move on to another political question.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that. I was going to say you do have the current governor's record to go on, so you may not have met him personally, but certainly there's a record behind. Just wanted to point that out as well. The sixth question, we're going to start with Gareth Rhodes on this one, and actually I believe it was Jeff who raised this already. If elected, would you vote to return Nancy Pelosi as leader of the Democratic Conference? Why or why not?
I would not, but this is not to demean her many accomplishments. Speaker Pelosi, Leader Pelosi has, if you look at many of the accomplishments that were happened under the President Obama administration, she was a part of that, and I respect and admire her leadership for that. But I am running because we do need a new generation. We need new ideas. We need a new approach. And I don't want our party to continue to lose elections because of the battles of the past. I am tired of hearing, are you a Bernie Democrat or a Hillary Democrat? I'm the kind of Democrat that wants to make change in the 163 towns in this congressional district, that wants to pass Medicare for all, make sure we fight for a fossil fuel-free future, make sure we pass common sense gun safety reforms, the kind of issues that I've seen from traveling to now more than 140 of these towns, speaking with voters in more than 140 towns here, that unite 85, 90% of us, there is agreement on. And if we have a candidate who can go out to these areas and present that new vision, present a vision of where we've seen so many of our young people leave upstate New York, a young person who grew up right in this congressional district who is standing up to fight for it, gives such a compelling vision that people will come out and vote for this November.
Pat Ryan on the Nancy Pelosi question.
So I have to say, I've only ever been asked this question by journalists. And when I've, you know, we've been out doing this for a year now. We've knocked on now almost 50,000 doors between me and my team. The things that I hear over and over and over are, we're afraid we're going to lose our health care. We're ceding our leadership on the environment and standing up against climate change. We're caving in to the gun lobby. So many other series of issues where people are concerned about having someone from this community who's going to actually speak loudly and proudly for us on those issues. And I don't think that focusing on a hypothetical speaker election, which is so far off, rather than focusing on what people are talking about at their dinner tables, that families in this district are working 2, 3, 4 jobs to try to make ends meet. Most of those jobs don't even provide health care. Those are the things that we need to be talking about that I'll be talking about.
How to hear you, but Jeff, before we go to you, if you had to take a vote, how would you vote?
I don't have to take a vote yet, so.
If you did.
How can you ask a question where we don't even know who's on the ballot? I think that's an unfair question, frankly.
I'm sorry, I just wanted one last thing, and I'm asking of all, okay, I'm not picking on Pat at all, but this is someone you've watched because you're watching Congress, you're running, you know, you're hoping to run for Congress, so you're watching her actions and how she's leading, and I guess the question really is, do you think she's an effective leader? Would you vote for her again?
I don't think there's much leadership of either party right now. I agree with Gareth, we need a whole new set of leaders. That I firmly believe.
Thank you, Pat. Jeff?
I would vote against Nancy Pelosi, and I would vote for a change in direction to revive the Democratic Party. And I'm not afraid to say that here, and I'm not afraid to go to work on day one in Congress to make the changes that I'm talking about. I'm the only candidate here running who served over the course of a decade in the federal government, and I have a big idea for what I want to do on day one, because I don't think we should be in the position we're in to begin with. If just one executive on Wall Street had gone to jail for the massive heist of 2008, I don't think we'd have this president right now. If just one person had insisted and won support from the Democratic Party to stand up for single-payer Medicare for all and take on the health industry once and for all, I don't think we'd be in this mess either. I think that we can get out of it because the solutions are right there in the traditions of our party. They're there to take on a bold agenda that actually speaks for working people. Nobody should be working one job and not be able to get by and provide for their family. And yet that's the reality in our district, and it must change.
Thank you, Jeff. Dave Klug?
I would not vote for Nancy Pelosi. I believe Nancy has done a lot for our country. I respect her. I would honor her. But it is time to move on. The Democratic Party, and we've talked about this a lot, has a corporate wing to it that is beholden to corporations, by the way. and are tied into the same system that I've been yelling about with our campaign finance reform needs. We need a leadership that's going to fight for that, campaign finance reform. We need a leadership that's going to be procedurally combative with the Republicans who've taken advantage of our election system. We need a new Voters' Rights Act that stops what's going on in these Republican-controlled states where they diminish the right of people to vote. We need to take on all of those issues right away, and I don't see that leadership coming from Nancy Pelosi right now. So I want to see a leadership that's going to make a change, that's going to take on the Republicans, that's going to take on the reptilian approach of the Republican Party. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Erin Collier?
Thank you. I want to take 1 second to make a remark on the previous question about New York State election. I want to implore whoever is elected, a very important New York State initiative is the broadband initiative that is being rolled out right now. We're in the phase three of that program. Broadband is so important in our district, and we don't have it at my house in Cooperstown, and it is a huge restriction for our district, for small businesses, for across the board, and we really need it. And whoever is elected, I would encourage them and implore them to do more on that program to make sure everyone has broadband. On this question, I would like to say that I do think that Nancy Pelosi has been a fearless and tireless fighter for democratic principles in Congress. But I do also agree that it is time for fresh ideas and new faces in Congress. I think that I would push for new faces.
Thank you. Antonio Delgado?
Yeah, so one could see a scenario where not voting for Pelosi could lead to a Republican speaker. So the question, I think, is a bit too narrow, respectfully, and I'm not prepared to say yes or no, not knowing all the facts. However, I do agree with what's been said on stage here, and that is we do need young, fresh, diverse voices within the Democratic Party. I also want to take a point here to point out, or a moment to point out, you know, the Republicans, and Fazio in particular, are really committed to demonizing Pelosi. And I think there's a correlation between that and the fact that she's also the first woman speaker. And we as Democrats have got to stand up against that. The fact that she has emerged as one of the all-time greats in terms of leadership as a woman in the halls of Congress, and now she's being demeaned, to me reeks of misogyny. It is something that we as Democrats cannot buy into, and I won't.
Thank you, Antonio. Brian Flynn?
Yeah, I'd like to echo that point. I think that what we hear out there on the campaign trail and from Republicans and even from donors is a culture of misogyny that's attacking Nancy Pelosi. And I think that we as Democrats have to stand up against that and actually stand for women and equal rights and equal pay. And I don't think we've done a good job. And allowing Nancy Pelosi to be pilloried like that just perpetuates this culture of misogyny. But I really think it comes down to what does the Democratic Party stand for? As the only one on stage that is a lifelong Democrat who has fought against the establishment, who has a track record of fighting for Democratic candidates, I believe we have to stop with the politics of cynicism. We have to say what we believe in and stick to it. We have to say that we're for Medicare for all, not just universal coverage. Say something definitive and stand by it. Say we're for Medicare for all. Say we support public education and that we're against charter schools and we're against vouchers. Say that we're for retirement security. We're not going to give up on that. We have to stop triangulating, equivocating, and thinking that we need to run former Republicans or Republicans in Democratic clothes in order to win districts like this. What we need to do is to stand up and believe in something, and that will convince people to follow us.
And that's time. Thank you. Alan Chartok has the next question.
This one goes to Pat Ryan. First, during the current term, the 19th Congressional District has had several communities confronted with environmental crises, including water contamination in the Rensselaer County, in an era when the Environmental Protection Agency appears to be hobbled. Pardon me. What would you do in Congress to protect the environment?
So this is one of my top three priorities in the campaign. Our environment, and not only to me morally as someone who's grown up here running around the woods and swimming in lakes and rivers and fishing, I want my kids to have that same experience. I want to take off the table any fears that we should worry that we're not going to have clean air, we're not going to have clean water, we're not going to have soil that we can continue to farm, which is a huge part of our economy. I mean, we've got, not just with the EPA, but across the board with the Department of Education and Housing and Urban Development, we have an insidious situation where Trump has put in place leaders of these agencies
that before they even took over were saying they were going to completely dismantle them and handicap them. And now, you know, we're going to see that in the VA as well, which is one that's very near and dear to my heart. We in Congress, with the executive crippling these organizations, we take on a new greater responsibility to protect and remake the case for these critical services. That's how I would approach it.
The next question goes to Jeff Beals.
Climate breakdown is the defining national security threat of our time, and I say that as somebody that worked in national security for a significant part of my career and watches in disbelief as our country ignores the real threats and focuses on the phantom ones. We have to take action here, and it's something that I've followed in my own life. You know, when I left being a State Department diplomat from the Middle East who speaks Arabic and served with distinction overseas, guess who offered me a job? ExxonMobil. And I turned them down to be a teacher here in our community. And that's the type of action that we need to take on a much bigger level. We need to stand up to General Electric and have them complete the cleanup of the Hudson River. We need to stand up now to wasting trillions overseas on these wars and put that money to work here for a federal jobs guarantee and a Green New Deal in this country that can turn what is right now a threat into an enormous opportunity of growth in this country in the fields of solar and wind where we can create jobs.
Thanks, Jeff. And on to Dave Clegg.
I'm going to be doing a 200-mile bike ride through this district to highlight environmental issues that we have here. We have over a dozen Superfund sites in this district alone. The corporate world has toxified our environment, and we have borne the cost of that. You know, the Superfund money that was set up originally has not been funded by any corporation since 1995. Congress has been taking that out of taxpayer money. So one of the first things I would do when I get to Congress would be to say we have to now fund the Superfund with taxes from the corporate polluters that are creating these problems. And that's the way it was initially, and that's the way it should continue to be. Now, we have to move to a clean energy future right away. We have a fossil fuel industry that we're still subsidizing. Why? We have to incentivize a clean energy future where we move to solar and wind and thermal and all the things that we can do to make our environment cleaner.
Aaron Collier?
First of all, we need to elect people who actually believe climate change is a real thing. We also need to elect people who value our environment. We had several people come to our farm and ask us to frack on our land, and we said absolutely not every single time because we choose environment over profit, something that the Republicans are not doing. Trump's infrastructure bill does not even mention clean energy. We need to invest more in clean energy. We need to shift away from fossil fuels and invest in clean energy, and we have the resources to do that. We're just not doing it. We need to keep the clean power plan. This is our best shot at combating climate change, and Scott Pruitt continues to try to roll it back. We need to keep our fuel economy standards that Obama put in place in 2012 and is reducing global pollution and global warming. And again, Scott Pruitt is trying to repeal this. We need to protect the Clean Water and Clean Air Act, which would allow making sure that we're protecting our water resources here in our district. We also need to keep and protect solar tax credit. That is expiring in 2021, and that is a really great incentive to make sure people are investing in clean energy themselves.
Antonio Delgado.
So one of the first things I can do to protect the environment is beat John Faso. John Faso has a history of harming our environment, whether it was lobbying for oil pipelines or whether it was one of his first votes to roll back the stream protection rule. So we see where he is on this issue. Here are the facts. We are propping up big oil right now to the tune of about $4 or $5 billion a year. Big oil. Beals mentioned Exxon. Before the tax break, when the rate was 35%, they were already paying about 17.5% because of all the tax breaks and all the subsidies that they were given by us, taxpayers. So take those tax subsidies, take those tax credits, and shift them over into the renewable energy space to incentivize investment in solar, geothermal, wind. In my backyard, in Rhinebeck, my backyard, Hudson Solar, the first net zero commercial building in the northeast of the United States of America. We have it right here in our own home. Thank you.
And Brian Flynn.
I'm the one candidate with a track record as an environmental activist, so this is very near and dear to me. I helped start the New York chapter of an organization called Environmental Entrepreneurs, and we would actually look to help pass specific legislation that not only reduced emissions, but also create jobs at the same time. And that's how we need to approach our approach to the environment right now. First and foremost, though, we got to play a little defense because of people like John Faso. So first, we need to stop not only fracking, but all the fracking infrastructure that's destroying our communities here. We need to actually figure out what happened in Hoosick Falls and finally get the PFOA levels to the place they should be. We need to finally clean up the Hudson with the PCBs, which we haven't done enough of. But then we got to look at how do we actually create jobs using green energy. And it, as you know, green energy creates jobs 12 times faster than any other sector. I would transfer the $40 billion that we currently spend propping up the fossil fuel industry to the renewable industry as a way of creating jobs. If we do that, we can achieve both things, protect the environment and create jobs at the same
time.
Thank you. Gareth Rhodes.
So I'm running a very different type of campaign. It's about spending time in these communities. And I went to Hoosick Falls, and I went to Petersburg, and I sat with Michelle Baker and the other mothers of Hoosick Falls who years ago saw birth defects and saw their neighbors dying of cancer and asked why. And that's why, as a member of Congress, I will stand up and fight for a new water source for Petersburg, a new water source for Hoosick Falls, and make sure that Honeywell is the one that pays for it. Because we need to hold these corporate polluters accountable for their actions, and we need to make sure we have an EPA that is regulating these dangerous chemicals and make sure they're testing it in our waters. I used to be a water well driller, and I can tell you it is hard to find clean water in many parts of upstate New York, and that's why it's one of our most precious resources we must protect. This is personal to me as well because I've hiked every peak in the Catskills growing up here, and I remember when the acid rain had destroyed the tops of these peaks. I grew up striper fishing on the Hudson, and most Mays you would find me out there doing that today. Not this one. But this is why cleaning up the Hudson is so important to me and why Faso's record on this, we have to hold accountable this November.
Thank you. Our next question will begin with Jeff Beals. Although the Affordable Care Act survives, the individual mandate requiring coverage has been scrapped, and more than 12% of Americans were without health insurance last year, according to a recent study. If elected to Congress, what would you do to reform the health care system, and do you support a single-payer model?
We have a health crisis in our home, and the solution to that crisis is Medicare for all. And I am the only candidate you can trust to go to Washington, face down the private insurance industry in its entirety, and pass single-payer health care. There are 121 Democrats in Congress now who are co-sponsors to a bill in the House to make this historic change, and it is our duty in this hard-hit district where so many people are suffering to take action now and join that chorus and make this a reality for our country. I think this comes down to a question of what we think our politics are about. The situation that I see when I'm out in our district is one that shocks the conscience. People who do not seek medical treatment, even though a woman who I met in Phoenicia has a mass growing in her side, but she's afraid of the bill. People who are taking half doses on their own medication because pharmaceutical companies are ripping them off. This is not the America that I believe in, and I took a vow to serve as a government servant. Now it's an America we have to change.
Next to Dave Clegg.
I believe in Medicare for all. I believe it will transform our country. I believe we have to do it. I had an experience when I was a young father, and my daughter was cut off from life-saving health care by an insurance company that put their profit level over my daughter's life. I will never forget that. I will never forgive it. Talk about who's going to fight. I've been fighting insurance companies for the last four decades to get health care for people that I represent. I've had experience, and I win time after time after time, and that's because I believe in it so strongly, and it is a right. It's a human right. So I will fight in Congress to my last breath to get Medicare for all. And I have been throughout this district, and I have seen the harm. I've been doing forums throughout seven of the counties in this district on Medicare for all with a panel of doctors, with all the problems that I hear from people who have deductibles, so they never actually get to their medical insurance because they can't pay the $5,000 deductible that they've earned.
Thank you. Moving right down the line to Erin Collier.
Yeah. We have a serious healthcare crisis in our country. Our district is really big, but everywhere you go, healthcare is the thing that everyone is absolutely concerned about. Our healthcare costs are too high, and our system is too complicated. A lot of families are literally one healthcare crisis away from going bankrupt. And I have a family member in this district who has health insurance through an employer and still had to pay over $5,000 out of pocket just to have a kid born at a hospital in our district. That's a lot of money. And for a lot of families, that's too much money. We absolutely have to do something about it. And we have people with serious health conditions who are unable to see a doctor because they literally can't afford it. So I do stand for Medicare for all. I believe that healthcare is a human right and that everyone should have healthcare no matter your age, your gender, your income level. If you have a pre-existing condition, I think everybody should have healthcare. And Medicare for all achieves that. It achieves a universal healthcare coverage and it also reduces our costs.
Thank you. Antonio Delgado, please.
Yes, we have absolutely got to get the profit motive out of our healthcare system. We ought to treat healthcare like the human right that it is, and it is a travesty that we're the only developed country in the world without universal healthcare. And that is why it is critical that we must fight diligently to move towards a system for Medicare for all. No question about that. We must take that fight. Now, how we do it is critical. And I think a very achievable first step in that direction is to make sure that folks have the opportunity to choose to opt into Medicare. What this will do is create a public floor, a competitor that'll keep the insurance companies honest, drive down premiums, and drive down deductibles, and allow folks who want to keep their health care to do so, but still join in the fight. Secondly, we must make sure that Medicare can negotiate drug prices with the pharmaceutical industry. It is a crime that that is not the case. Make sure that prescription drug companies can no longer pay generic brand companies to shelve their products at the expense of working folks trying to live. We do these things, we can transform our healthcare system.
Brian Flynn, please.
I've been advocating for Medicare for all for over a decade because I believe healthcare is a right and not a privilege, and because Medicare for all makes the most sense. It will enable us all collectively to spend less on healthcare, have more people covered, have better health outcomes, and create more jobs in our communities. To say that you're not for Medicare for all, not only doesn't make sense, I think it's not part of the Democratic platform. I believe that it's that important. We've been doing Medicare for all town halls throughout the district, and I had a gentleman come in and said that his sister, because she didn't have coverage, couldn't get a routine colonoscopy, and she died months later, she could have easily been saved if she'd actually gotten treatment at the right time, the right place. We have to stand up for this, and we cannot equivocate. To say that you're for someday moving to Medicare for all, the problem with that is that's what John Fassel will say. He's for universal coverage. We have to get out of the employer-based health insurance model. It makes no sense that your employers are involved in your health insurance. They're involved in your car insurance. Why are they involved in your health insurance? To be honest, it's kind of creepy.
Thank you. Next to Gareth Rhodes, same question, please.
Yes. So when I drilled water wells, I had health insurance. And when I was considering going to college, I made the decision that a lot of people make, which is you have to give up your health insurance to go to school. And I did. And to me, it was a tough decision because I had lost a parent to cancer when she was 33 years old. And living without health insurance was terrifying. But I don't want more people to have to make that same decision. And that's why, to me, Medicare for all, it's not just a political football. It's personal. And why I will fight night and day for this in Congress, because it has to happen, and it has to happen now. And we have in this congressional district, in New York 19, we have a crisis in our rural counties and our rural communities where it's so hard to get health care. Two of our counties, Delaware County and Schoharie County, Delaware is the largest county geographically, they don't have a single maternity ward. A mother came up to us in Middleburg in Schoharie County. It was the 15th child born that year in the Cobo School Hospital in the hospital's emergency room. We are the wealthiest nation on earth, and our healthcare delivery is worse than a third world country. It has to be fixed, and it has to be fixed
now.
Thank you.
Pat Ryan will finish this round for us.
So we also need to keep in mind that Fassel is definitely not for universal healthcare. In fact, Fassel was leading the charge in his first few months in office to roll back the tremendous progress we made under the Affordable Care Act. And when they failed to do that with the repeal bill, they did it and snuck it into this disastrous tax scam bill that repealed the mandate. And in a recent study from the Congressional Budget Office, that's going to raise premiums for everybody in this country between 10 and 20%. So the first thing our member of Congress needs to do is make sure we hold what we've got and protect against the onslaughts that's coming. Then as we look forward, two guiding principles. Universal coverage, every American needs care they can afford, and we have to get the profit motive out of our healthcare system.
How do we do that specifically? Three things I support from day one in January 2019, lowering the Medicare age to 55. For those under 55, creating the ability to buy into Medicare and then working to bring that age down and down and down. And then third, lowering prescription drug prices by giving negotiating power on Medicare Part D.
Thank you. If we hustle, and this is a note for everyone here, we can fit in two more rounds, and that's what I think we should do. I want to make a brief programming note that at the end of this debate, Allison, Alan, and I will be taking listener calls in reaction to today's debate on Vox Pop, and you can join that conversation at 800-348-2551. Next question to Allison Dunn, and let's remember we're trying to fit two more full rounds in.
Okay, and this is for Dave Klug we begin with. And what definitively sets you apart from the other six candidates on this stage? What is the one stance only you take?
I would say the Medicare for All is the closest because I'm not an incrementalist. I'm somebody who believes we have to go the whole way. And I think that if we do it by pieces, that we're only going to continue in a system that is broken. You don't build a house on a broken foundation. Right now, our healthcare system is broken. If we move slightly to one side or the other, we continue this ceaseless debate with the Republicans about whether the Affordable Care Act was the problem or not. The Republicans trying to take away healthcare, Democrats trying to move it forward. Medicare for All will transform us. Medicare for All will provide us, each and every resident of the United States, good health care without having to pay any premiums, without having to pay deductibles. It will provide good health care for less than we're paying right now. We pay 18% of our GDP for health care right now. We pay more than twice the amount that any other industrialized country pays. We could do better.
Thank you, Dave. Erin, the one thing that sets you apart from the other six.
Yeah, also, like Dave, as being a candidate that's for Medicare for All, this is an important and distinguishing factor amongst the candidates. Not all candidates on the stage are for Medicare for All. I am for Medicare for All. The importance behind Medicare for All is that it does guarantee everybody has health care. And secondly, by doing that, by the whole idea behind Medicare for All is that by pooling everybody and making sure that everyone is healthy and everyone has health care, that is what reduces our costs. It also takes out the inefficiencies of having several different systems. As it is right now, a lot of medical offices hire whole teams of people just to deal with all the different insurance options and all the paperwork. That is a huge inefficiency that adds a huge margin on top of costs and is what is driving up our healthcare costs. Medicare for All would take away that cost, and that's what reduces costs, and that's why I'm for Medicare for All, which is, again, a very important distinguishing factor amongst the candidates. Also, in addition to that, I would say, you know, my advocacy for working class families coming from a poor farming family, advocacy for our agriculture sector, advocacy for women's issues as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Erin, Antonio Delgado?
Yeah, I think the thing that sets me apart are the diversity of my experiences. I'm very proud to first have been raised in a working class family in Schenectady, cutting coupons with my mother on Saturday mornings to Patti LaBelle in the background. And, you know, from there, being fortunate enough to go off to Colgate and play basketball, just inducted into the Upstate Hall of Fame, Basketball Hall of Fame, for those who are curious. And then earned a Rhodes Scholarship to Oxford, studied philosophy and political theory, then came back and got my law degree at Harvard. And the best thing about that was meeting my lovely wife, who grew up in Woodstock, and then going off to L.A. and starting my own independent music company, working with young kids in hip-hop. And I can promise you my parents were a little confused by that decision. And then coming back home and working as a litigator in the commercial space. I've had a diverse set of experiences, and along the way, I've had to figure out how to communicate, how to advocate, how to be a champion for those values that I learned right here at home. And I think that is a strength that we need now more than ever. Somebody who has the ability to be an advocate and bring folks together and come from a place of love and understanding and compassion.
Thank you.
Thank you, Antonio. Brian Flynn?
I am not being inducted into any Basketball Hall of Fame. I'm not sure if that distinguishes me, but I want to make sure I make that clear. Listen, I'm a lifelong progressive candidate and the only candidate who's been advocating for Medicare for All for more than a decade. I'm the only candidate who's created hundreds of good-paying blue-collar American jobs. I'm the only candidate who's been to Washington and gotten legislation passed. I was involved for decades in passing the Iran-Libya Sanctions Act. I'm also the only union member, the only candidate whose campaign staff is unionized, and I'm the only one who talks openly about laws to support labor unions, including the Employee Free Choice Act. That makes me quite different, because right now in Congress, we have three members of Congress who are union members, perhaps the most underrepresented group in Congress, and we wonder why they spend so much time screwing working people. I think we have to send someone to Congress who knows what it means to fight for working people, for fight what they believe in, and as someone said to me the other day, that he said I was a Democrat the way they used to make him.
Thank you, Brian. Gareth Rhodes?
See, this afternoon you've heard a lot of agreement on a lot of issues. That's a good thing because we are proud progressive Democrats running for a better vision for this country and this congressional district. What I am doing is I'm taking an approach that's completely different than everyone else on this stage. We have seen millions and millions of dollars spent on TV in this district. Your mailboxes have been stuffed for the last couple of cycles by the Democrats. We need a candidate who's running a different type of campaign. I bought a Winnebago, a 1999 Ford Winnebago. I'm going to every single town in this congressional district, and it is making a difference. I'm going to towns where very few Democrats voted in the last election. I was out in the Village of Deposit, which is in the town of Sanford. 25 Democrats voted their last election. I went out there, and I walked up and down Main Street with the former village mayor, talking to the town librarian, talking to some of those small business owners. They had not seen a Democratic candidate in that town since Maury Cinci drove on Route 17 through town to get out to Ithaca. That's what we have to do as a party if we want to win this election, because the advantage we have against Faso is he doesn't go anywhere. He doesn't show up in any of these towns, doesn't do town hall meetings. We're not going to beat him with money. Thank you. Have to beat him with showing up.
Thank you, Gareth. Pat Ryan?
So in terms of issues, I think where I set myself apart is on the gun violence issue. If you haven't seen our first TV ad, I'd encourage you to check it out. It's 30 seconds. It's on our website. It's up online. It's on TV. And while we all agree in a room like this, I was willing to put it out on the line and have the courage to take a tough position in a tough district, and that's what's called for on a whole bunch of issues right now in our country. The other thing, frankly, that I think sets me apart is I'm the only one that can win against John Faso. A poll came out 3 weeks ago from a reputable polling firm called PPP, tested all the front runners in the field, and I was the only one who actually beat John Faso in a general election matchup heads on. It's because of my roots here. It's because of my record of service. And it's because of my business experience. And at the end of the day, with what's going on in our country, what's going on here on the ground, we have to win this seat back.
Thank you, Pat. Jeff Beals?
I'm the only candidate with the tough experience and progressive agenda to win here. And I'm the only one who's daring to call out by name the fundamental problem of our time. And it's a problem of corporate power. Almost all the issues that we talk about in a forum like this seem so diverse, but they come back to a single source. Now, I'm speaking as a U.S. history teacher, too, and that's where I find the majesty and the opportunity of this moment. Our revolution came about as a rebellion against an aristocracy, as a rebellion against charter companies that thought they would rule us as subjects instead of citizens. I think that has to change, and I'm thinking of my own students and their own future when I stand up now and advocate putting the people back in power of their government. That means breaking up the big banks on Wall Street. It means taking action to enact a federal jobs guarantee, something no one else is advocating, and in the style of FDR, putting people to work towards a massive project in this country to give everybody health care and the work they need as a right.
Thank you, Jeff Beals. I just have one follow-up question at the risk of forestalling the hustling, and that is there anybody on this stage who is not considering him or herself a progressive Democrat?
For our radio listeners, no hands were up.
Good question. Okay.
Alan Chartok has our last question, and again, we're keeping a close eye on the stopwatch.
Okay, we got to go fast. To Aaron Collier, in light of the At Me Too and other movements, what would you do in Congress to ensure justice for victims of sexual assault and harassment? What legislation might you craft to give weight to holding offenders responsible while protecting victims and ensuring their voices are not silenced?
Thank you for that question. As a woman, I obviously feel very strongly about women's rights and standing up for women. First, I want to start with actually representation. This is a gender inequality. We make up half of the population, and we are less than 20%. In Congress. That is a gender inequality. And that's actually our all-time high in history. 20% right now is our all-time high. If you look at over all of time, women have made up less than 3% of leadership, 3% of Congress. I think that women deserve another seat at the table. And I certainly am just as qualified as anyone else and feel that women deserve more of a seat at the table and more of a voice. And I think if we have more women elected and in Congress, we will fight. I will fight to protect women's rights. Watching Trump's attacks on women, on women's health care, the fact that he had sexual allegations as a president is sexual harassment allegations as a president is beyond me and is terrifying to have that person leading our company or our country. And I will fight very hard to put in place policy that addresses that.
Thank you. Antonio Delgado.
We could stop this god-awful practice of having taxpayer dollars fund non-disclosure agreements to protect this behavior that we all know is disgusting and should no longer be tolerated. And it does start from the top down. And the fact that we do have a sexual predator in office is deeply problematic. Now, I think it also goes beyond just the harassment question. The culture of misogyny is coursing through the veins of this country, and we see it not just in the level of income inequality, where women continue to make 80 cents on the dollar. African-American women make 67 cents on the dollar. We still have a situation where we're trying to figure out how we can make sure that we have actual child care for folks. Domestic violence numbers are through the roof. And what are we doing about it? Absolutely nothing. Instead, we have folks, I think when we did the first AHCA, was it 12, 13 men behind a closed door determining what the fate of women would be when it comes to their own health care decisions? We got bans now in play on the floor seeking to ban abortion after a certain period of time when the right has already been made clear by our Supreme Court. These are about family planning. This is about a woman's right.
That's time.
Let's protect it.
Brian Flynn.
This is about more than just sexual assault. This is about an all-out assault on women and women's equality that's been going on for decades, if not centuries. Women in the workforce, for example, hit its height more than 20 years ago, and it's continued to be undermined. And this attack on women's reproductive rights is an attack on their economic freedom. And we've done nothing as Democrats, as Americans, to fight for this issue. That's why I support the Paycheck Fairness Act. I support universal pre-K. I support paid family and medical leave. I also support support for elder care, because the burden overwhelmingly falls on women to take care of the elderly in their homes. This culture of assault on women has been allowed to continue partly because we haven't done enough. Yes, we have to actually make those NDAs illegal, but we also have to change how we actually police the situations. We have to have prosecutors and police departments that more accurately reflect the communities that they serve and have more women in them. We also need to figure out how we have fewer kangaroo courts on college campuses sexual assault is running rampant.
Thank you.
Gareth Rhodes.
Well, the Senate has acted, but the House has failed to, and the House needs to act now. We need to make sure we're banning mandatory arbitration. We need to make sure we pass real laws that guarantee equal pay for equal work. John Faso had the opportunity in 2002 as a member of the Assembly to vote on an equal pay for equal work a constitutional amendment here in the state. 150 members of the Assembly, 149 vote yes, one votes no. John Faso. What we didn't talk about today as well, something I want to touch on briefly, is racial justice, criminal justice reform, and that's why I will support the Dignity for Incarcerated Women Act. Right now in the United States, while incarceration rates are lower, there's more women in prison than ever before. It's still legal in many states right now for women, if she is pregnant while imprisoned, to be shackled while she is in labor. This cannot happen anymore in the United States, and that's why I will support that law, which will outlaw it in all 50 states.
Thank you. Pat Ryan.
The overall problem in the system is that the deck and the scales are tipped in favor of those in power, and particularly men in power, and those who are victims are left with very few options. From a legislative perspective, Senator Gillibrand's Me Too Congress Act is a specific piece of legislation that not only should apply to those in Congress, but that needs to apply to everyone across this country. To actually change this culture and the situation. The other things that I would fight for in terms of women's rights, repealing the Hyde Amendment. That's going to be a tough fight, but one I want to take on. Protecting Planned Parenthood funding and actually raising funding. The Paycheck Fairness Act to ensure everyone in this country is paid fairly for equal work. And then a federal, national-level paid family leave program for both mothers and fathers, so that we can allow people to have the financial ability to do that.
Jeff Beals.
Women's rights are at the heart of every issue we're addressing here today. And I say that as somebody who's a teacher of a class largely of women who are graduating soon from school and who I encouraged and saw stand up against the Title IX restrictions that are being lifted by Betsy DeVos and were really concerned about what they were going to face in university. This goes to a deeper question of who we're speaking for in this election. You know, there are more CEOs, I believe, with the name John than there are women CEOs altogether in the top Fortune 500 companies in this country. You know, I was endorsed in this race by a national group of Bernie Sanders staffers, the Justice Democrats, because I'm turning down that corporate money and that corporate influence to stand up for a people's agenda that really represents the people who can't listen tonight or can't listen on this radio show at all. You know, I want to speak truth to power, and I've made a contribution in my past to the WAMC lockbox because I think that's what you're trying to do here. And nobody's speaking for women, and nobody is speaking for people who are working so hard and not getting by, and we need to start doing it.
Thanks, Jeff. Dave, Clegg?
I've spent a few decades supporting women who've been the victims of domestic violence. In all ways, they are people who need the support of advocates on their behalf, and that's what I've done. There was an indivisible group in Ulster, which because of the work that I've done over the last four decades, have decided 75% of them, after vetting all the candidates and after doing opposition research on all the candidates, decided 75% to endorse me. Now, I'm pro-choice 100%. As you probably paid attention to in the news, Donald Trump has just taken Title 10 away from Planned Parenthood. And he's saying that putting a gag rule on Planned Parenthood and preventing Planned Parenthood from providing counseling on abortion. And we have to challenge that. We can do that from Congress. So the first thing that I would do if I get to Congress is to amend Title 10 to provide no question about the fact that abortion rights are covered.
That's time. Thank you.
And that truly is all the time we have for today's debate among the Democratic candidates for New York's 19th congressional district seat. I'd like to thank the candidates, Jeff Beals, Dave Clegg, Aaron Collier, Antonio Delgado, Brian Flynn, Gareth Rose, Pat Ryan, and our panelists, Ian Pickus, who arranged this whole thing, and Allison Dunn of WAMC. I'm Alan Chartok, and now can we have a round of applause for the candidates?